Back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I couldn't find a way to get in with that hard rock there. Couldn't find my entrance point. Anyway, Justin Cuthbert, Nathan Schwarfer. It's Monday. We're still digesting. Buddy, you don't even know about air fryers.
Buddy, the air fryer takes are in the hotline now. Apparently, I need to investigate air fryer oven versus basket.
Yeah. Is that, I don't know. I don't know what that difference is. I feel like the basket size is my only point of contention. Just make sure you get a big enough air fryer basket. Anyway, I think we both have this problem. Not problem. It's not a problem. It's the wrong way to say it.
Speak for yourself.
But I got a mom text yesterday. Shout out to my mom, Diane Cuthbert, one of the greatest people I know.
She sounds so lovely.
She still feels bad for me when sporting events don't go the way it should.
Oh.
I got this text yesterday with a frowny face. Sorry,
like,
the Canadian.
Wait, was it the actual emoji or like the dots with the
actual
parenthesis?
Emoji.
Okay.
Sorry, the Canadian soccer team didn't do better. Frown emoji.
That's
she,
really
she knows
nice
I was
of her.
Upset.
My mom cried during the first goal.
Tears of joy, obviously.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. We're like, you don't even care about soccer. She's like, I do. I love soccer.
She still thinks that I need to be, like, uplifted in my 30s when sports don't go right, which is nice.
Moms know how to, they know when their son or their daughter is in need.
She could just sense it that I was upset. I didn't know how to feel. And I still don't know how to feel. Did that therapy session we had in the 6 a.m. hour help you at all? Did it make it more conflicting? I didn't think you were expecting me to be so negative.
Yeah, I wasn't, actually. I thought you'd be a bit more optimistic or level-headed, but you know what? You stand for what you believe in, Justin.
That's not even what I believe in. It's just how I feel.
What'd you think of the lack of, or what did you think of, was it Alphonso Davies that didn't want to speak to the media after?
It was.
What'd you think of that?
Okay, so, I mean, it depends on who you...
Okay.
Okay, so there are a lot of people mentioning it. We're not going to mention names. Who was not complaining, whatever. I do think it's his responsibility because I feel like, you know, the country wants to hear from you, Alphonso. You just had this amazing moment, and we want to know what you think and what you feel. We had to share our emotions. We wanted to know how each other felt. Like, we went through that ourselves. Mm-hmm. We'd like to see him express it as well. However, if you are a media member and you're complaining about someone not speaking, it is complaint from you and
because
your
you
own
want...
objectives only. Mm. You are complaining because the story you want to write,
that's true,
you're not being able to write. It's not because you think he's hurting Canadian soccer by not speaking.
But
it's
you want those articles.
It's because
those tweets.
You can't write the story you're intending on writing. So it is self-serving in that way. And to suggest it's not is wrong because I've been mm-hmm. there and I've felt and experienced what it's like when someone doesn't come out when you're banking on them coming out to do your job.
Well,
so it is about you and your job. It's not about the greater good of Canadian soccer.
That makes sense.
Don't like color it as that. Just say what it is. You're annoyed that you didn't come out.
Yep.
That's what it is. So that's it.
Two solid takes because I think you watch any captain or leader. You know, you have a blowout game. You lose in the Stanley Cup final.
Right.
And you got to sit on the podium and face the media. Not like you, that's part of your responsibility.
And that's a negative connotation. You got to face the media like you're going to get grilled. No, you've got to
you're representing
be a leader
something.
And
yep.
represent the organization, the club, mm-hmm. all that stuff. To help us sift through these thoughts is our insider, Jeff Blair, which is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Blair is the co-host of Kick in the Grass on Sportsnet, the Sportsnet radio network. Blair, we've been going through our emotions. Ailish more hopeful, me a little bit more disappointed. Where's like that overriding emotion for you as you digested the loss in the moment and now have had a couple hours to think about it?
I mean, my goal coming into this for Canada was to score a goal and to get a point. And because this is a really good group. I mean, Belgium, I think, is far and away the weakest team in the group. But the other two teams are really, really, really good. So realistically, I thought Canada's best chance was to probably get a draw against somebody, against Morocco. And as I said, I wanted a point, and I wanted a goal scored, and I wanted something to kind of announce that, you know, Canada was on the world stage. And other than that, I'm all about 2026. And I think if you put John Herdman up against the wall, fully clothed, if you put him up against the wall, I think he would tell you that deep down, whatever happened here was going to be a learning experience. It's all about 2026 and ensuring that you get out of the group stage, because you do not want to be a host nation that gets eliminated in the group stage. And of course, in the next World Cup, there's going to be three host nations. So now, I'm really happy with the way everything's gone. I guess the one disappointment for me is Jonathan David not being able to impose his will on matches, the way I thought he'd be able to do. I still think it was a colossal, monumental mistake to have Alphonso Davies take the penalty kick. I heard John Herdman's reasoning, you know, there's an $85 million player, et cetera, et cetera. Well, Jonathan Davies is a highly valued, or Jonathan David is a highly valued player as well. He takes penalties for a team in one of the five best leagues in the world. He's the second leading goal scorer in that league, in Liga. I mean, come on. That, to me, was a very naive moment for Canada. Your best player doesn't necessarily take your best, or doesn't necessarily take penalties for you. It's your best penalty taker. And there are a lot of teams, Manchester United, for example, there are a lot of teams, Chelsea, for example, there are a lot of teams with a lot of talented players. They have guys take penalties because they are specifically good at it. So that was kind of disappointing. But that's, sort of, I guess, at a more granular level. Overall, I'm really happy with things.
Okay, did Herdman, lots to touch on. Let's start with Herdman, because you mentioned the mistake there. We weren't as convinced. Like, we kind of felt like it's a bit revisionist to go really question it in the moment, because if it goes in, we're all happy and no one's talking about it. But your argument makes a ton of sense. I think the question posed to Atiba Hutchinson about, hey, do you want to come off? Do you think you should come off? Like, that's not really what you want out of a manager. You want decisions made by the manager. His inability to maybe change the tactics might be a personnel issue more than anything, but once the game state changed in both games, Canada looked lost. Do you think John Herdman had a bad World Cup? And this is not to mention, you know, what he said about Croatia and how that snowballed into a massive, massive thing.
Yeah, I don't think he did necessarily. The Hutchinson thing, again, this gets back to, I think, John Herdman's real motivation at this tournament. Atiba Hutchinson has been a long time, and people know about his history. I'm not going to bother getting into it. People know about Atiba Hutchinson's history. They know about Junior Hoylett's history with this program. I had absolutely no problem with John Herdman erring. How would you describe this? Not erring. Whatever the opposite of erring in the side of caution is, I had no problem with him doing that. People are talking about, well, Canada, once Croatia tied the match, it was obvious that Croatia's midfield, which, by the way, is the best midfield in the tournament. I said it at the start of the tournament. I'll be saying it at the end of the tournament. They're the best midfield in this tournament, and I'm not entirely certain it's as close as a lot of people think it is. Once they started stretching Canada out, once you started seeing players like Alistair Johnson just forced into a panic mode because there was too much space for the Croatian players, people were saying, well, why didn't John Herdman pivot off that? Well, we now know that Stephen Eustachio, arguably one of the three most important players on the team, maybe not the best, but one of the three most important players on the team, we already know he's hurt. Canada, to change tactics, to take Atiba Hutchinson off at that time with Eustachio hurt, John Herdman just doesn't have that many options. He's got Ismaël Koné as his preferred option, Jonathan Osorio, who, you know, again, hasn't played a lot in the lead up to this because of the neurological issues he had after a concussion. I think John Herdman had any choice. He, you know, I kind of admire a coach who, first of all, in his heart of hearts, knows his team isn't coming out of the group. I kind of admire a coach who looks at his team and says, what do we do best? Where are we strong? I don't think you could take a Canadian team as it is currently constituted and tell it to lay back against Croatia. I just don't think it would work. I don't think they have the players to do it. I don't think they have the mentality. Now, hopefully, in another 4 years, maybe Canada has developed some better defenders. Maybe Ishmael Kone has grown into, well, not maybe, he will. He will have grown into a bigger role with this team than maybe John Herdman has more options. But I think people need to take a step back here and realize that, you know, there is a massive gap in talent and depth between Croatia and Canada, more so than Belgium and Canada. Mm-hmm. I think maybe too many people read too much into that Belgium match. And you look at Croatia, that's a proper World Cup team. They're tournament tested. They've been to the final. They're nasty. They can do whatever. They can play whatever type of a game you want. And I thought going into the game, and I'm not going to say who this was, but I heard some commentators talking about how, well, look at Canada's front line. There's no way Ivan Perisic makes Canada's team. I'm going, come on. he is at worst the third best player on Canada. I mean, at worst. And you could probably argue that on his day, he's as good as Jonathan David. So, like I said, I think on balance, John Herdman did what he could do. And I think that's all you can ask at it. That's all you can ask out of a coach.
Do you buy the idea that some of John Herdman's off the pitch comments and the attraction of the media at all affected the game, whether that's Canada, whether that's Croatia having something else to play for? I mean, they mentioned that post game for sure. I don't know. It could be a percentage, but in a full picture, did that affect at all how either team might have performed?
No. I don't think it did. One thing you know about athletes, and it, you know, in a big event, something like the World Cup, where they're being interviewed, they will take the easy way out when a question is asked. And if you ask a player, did you get extra motivation out of something the other team's coach said, of course they're going to say yes. Mm-hmm. And they play along with the narrative. Croatia is a much better team. Without what John Herdman said, yeah, I don't know, maybe they win 3-1. But I don't think it had, I don't think it had any real impact one way or another. What I found really interesting, and I'm surprised more people didn't tweak onto this, is, and I thought Janine Becky did a terrific job. And, of course, she's been in a locker room where John Herdman has used motivational techniques. I've covered tournaments where John Herdman has used motivational techniques. All you have to do is look back at the Olympics in London when Canada lost that game to the United States and that horrible decision by, I think it was a Norwegian referee to a time-wasting call, which it was awful. It was a stupid decision.
Bogus. And I thought
the way John Herdman handled that was interesting. He didn't go over the top. He had a good read of his team, on his team. He let them use that as fuel for themselves. He was very sort of matter of fact. It wasn't a good call, but referees make mistakes, et cetera, et cetera. He knows how to use those tools in the coach's kit as well as anybody. And I told the story in A Kick in the Grass. When Joe Torre managed the Yankees, Joe Torre's pregame sessions were can't miss. He was famous. I mean, you'd talk to Joe Torre for 30 minutes. You could talk to him about anything. And I remember in one of the, towards the end of his career, somebody just asked him about, why do you do this? 30 minutes every day with 20 writers? Why do you do this? Do you ever feel like just taking a day off? And he just said, nah, because the 30 or 40 minutes I spend talking with you guys is 30 or 40 minutes you're not in the clubhouse bugging the players. And I think that what John Herdman did do, right, when he came out and said that, nobody talked about Davies missing the penalty. Nobody talked about Jonathan David disappearing. Nobody talked about will Canada get their first goal. It was all John Herdman. And I know we talked to Christian Jack about this. And Christian said, I don't think it was necessarily planned. I think it was an emotional moment for John Herdman, something he's going to have to learn from. But here's the thing. He doubled down on that statement. He could have very easily, after the initial statement came out, very easily said, you know, I was way over the top, too emotional, Bob. He explained it again and went back and revisited it. And in his interviews after, used the same lines, you know, talking about his wife and her reaction to the picture and the Canadian team was, what was his phrase? They were light and bright during practice. He had this all planned. I'm absolutely convinced he had it planned to remove the pressure from the players. And I'd probably do the same thing in his position because I don't want the dialogue to be, why did Alphonso Davies choke from the penalty spot? You know, where's Jonathan Day? I don't want that.
Well, we talk about the next 4 years and how important it is for this group to get better because it was laid out in plain sight that there are levels to this. Is it devastating to this organization if Herdman gets up and leaves?
Yeah, I think it is. I'm not certain he will necessarily. I mean, if you want to look for, I guess, a silver lining behind this, I would ask you if you were running a...
Yeah, I think the stock dropped a little bit.
Exactly. If let's say you're running a West Ham or something like that, and you could pick from a whole pool, international pool of coaches. What are you thinking this morning? There's a guy who managed a team that got boat raced by Croatia and lost to a horrible Belgian team because a guy who never takes penalties took penalties in the first. I don't think that's necessarily an issue. I think John Herdman will likely stay here through the World Cup. Maybe he gets a raise out of it. I don't know. Maybe he has an opt-out clause. That's something that's entirely possible. The most important thing takeaway I have from this tournament is I think the last time Canada beat a team from Europe or a UEFA team was like 2016. I think it's 15 or 16 matches ago. I know they beat Belarus 2-1. What I'm hoping is that in the run-up to the World Cup, where we're already in, so we don't have to go through the whole qualifying process. I'm hoping Canada impressed enough people that Canada's soccer, when it starts looking at its friendlies, broadens out beyond playing Curaçao or other teams in CONCACAF and some minnows. Now, I want to see this Canadian program in the lead up to the World Cup. I want to see them play England. I want to see them play Germany. I want to see them play France. I want to see them step out of their comfort zone and take on some of the really big fish internationally. I don't want to see them playing Bahrain or I just don't want to see that anymore. And if Canada can get a point against Morocco, And kind of put themselves in the picture, right? So that if you're the English FA and you're planning your friendly schedule and Canada's got an open date that matches our open date. Oh, that's kind of interesting. The travel might work. They've got enough players in Europe. Maybe we can pull it off. That's what I want to see from Canada soccer. I want to see more games against quality competition. Canada soccer had a match set, I believe, against Iran, and politically it didn't come off, and I understand that. Iran is the perfect team for Canada to play in a warm-up. A bona fide World Cup team. That's what I want taken away from this from Canada soccer, is enough of the small thinking. You're now an international, not power, but you're now a reality on the international stage. Act like it. No more issues with equal payment for players, for men's and women's players. None of those issues. No more issues with image rights or, kit, travel, anything like that. It's time now to really step up and start pounding some money into this team, into this organization, and expanding your footprint. And that starts by playing better teams in your lead up to the World Cup, so that when you come up against a team like Croatia, when you come up against teams that are more tactically advanced, when you come up against teams that have enough depth that they can, shape shift sort of at the coach's whim, well, you've got some video on that and you've got some experience dealing with it. And that's something that I think really, Canada really lacked in the match against Croatia. Sometimes it's not necessarily tactics or a coach's decision. There's got to be an instinct in the players that are on the pitch to say, okay, we're getting stretched a bit here. Let's just kind of, we're not going to park the bus, but let's pull back a little bit. Or individually, okay, we're getting stretched here. Maybe I've got to be a little more cautious when I make my runs down the flanks. Maybe I've got to be a little more aware of the guy on my left as well as the guy on my right. And you need things like that kind of built up in the memory bank to, to allow you to compete in the international stage. I think that's the biggest thing to come out of this. And if Canada can beat or draw Morocco, who's a very, very, very good team with a good international pedigree, then I think Canada's put themselves in a position where you may have countries saying, you know what, it's a pretty entertaining team. It's a team we may meet in the World Cup at some point. If you're a team getting ready to play teams that are athletic and love to attack down the flanks, even if you're not in Canada's group, or even if you're not going to be playing Canada in the World Cup, what better practice for your team than having to take on Alphonso Davies and Tejon Buchanan? And I think that's the next big thing here for Canada soccer.
Well, I think this is my biggest worry here, because I think there's an assumption, hey, we'll be better in 4 years. But there's a good chance that this is not linear. I think this sort of protective, hey, first time here, we'll be way better next year, and we'll be there every year from there on in. I mean, it's not that simple. There are other teams.
Well, you will be there next year, though.
You will be there next time, and that's a guarantee, and it'll be a different World Cup, unfortunately, I think. But there is no guarantee that you're going to be a better team. There is no guarantee that you can just be complacent and get to the point where you need to get. This should be a wake-up call that you're not there and a lot has to be done. And I frankly worry about the infrastructure. I worry that Canada soccer won't get them the games they need. I worry about the money not being there. Do you have the same concerns that, hey, this still isn't sophisticated as it should be, where Croatia, 4 million population, they're such a success story because they've installed what you need to produce great players. And I just worry that, we're not going to make the adjustments we need to. We're not going to get the friendlies. We're not going to pour the money in. What is there to suggest that what they need, they will get over the next 4 years and beyond?
That is a really good question. And I think we need to see what the next sort of international window or international cycle tells us. Again, if Canada is going to be playing, a bunch of countries with no chance of getting into the World Cup, then I think we have to ask some questions. It's also vitally important. I mean, Canada does have some issues beyond just simply quote unquote not being good enough. We don't have any defenders. They're not very good. I mean, I can't put it any other way. They're not very good. There are a ton of teams in this tournament that I don't think Kamal Miller I know he doesn't get in the team, let alone play. Similarly, Stephen Vittoria, God bless him, works hard, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not entirely certain he is of the good quality. That is a real issue for Canada, is the back. Plus, Mian Borjan is old. He ain't going to be back next year. So it's vitally important, I think, that Canada not only continue to develop, the Richie Lareas, kind of the supporting cast, right? Because Davies is going to be there, David will be there, but Canada needs to develop, Tejon Buchanan will be there, Canada needs to develop more of a supporting cast. And what I think is also something that hasn't been talked about enough is it's vitally important Canada establish itself in the international stage, because let's be clear, we are going to need to somehow find some dual nationals who want to play for Canada. in order to sort of fill out the program. And that's just a reality. And a ton of countries are like that. We need to find more Ishmael Kones who have a choice of two or three countries to play for and choose Canada. Right? We need that. That's something we can't let our start backsliding on, because we used to we went down there with Owen Hargreaves. Right? We've already seen that happen where players are given the choice between playing for Canada and another country, and they play for another country because there's no choice of going to the World Cup. That's another aspect of this that can't be overlooked. That we have to put ourselves in a position where essentially a player with a decision to make, because there are a lot of good young soccer players in this country. And I mean, I'll tell you what, that it is the growth sport in Canada, right? I mean, with all due respect to hockey, hockey's pricing itself out of the youth market.
Basketball's coming too.
Basketball's coming too. But you know what the problem with basketball is? Basketball is still largely, it's an urban-based sport. It's in the cities. It's in Vancouver, Montreal, and Toronto, right? And soccer's cheap to play. and the important thing about soccer in Canada, and one of the things that has always dragged us down, is the country's so damn big and so damn spread out that, you know, John Herdman will tell you when he was running the women's program, his nightmare, I remember him telling me one time, my nightmare is that there is a 14-year-old girl in Regina who's the best player this country's, could be the best player this country's ever produced, and we're just not seeing her because the pathways for her aren't clear enough. It's not like Belgium. It's not like a small country where if you're really good, it's a one-hour drive to go and see how good you are, right? So all of these issues, I think, are forcing Canada soccer into a moment. And, I mean, you're right. They are going to have to step up, and they're going to start, they're going to have to start running this program better. And they're going to have to, they're going to have to do a better job of looking down the road and seeing potential obstacles and addressing them before it gets to court. Right? I mean, that's just not, you want your players to be concerned about one thing and one thing only. You don't want them worried about, you know, do I have to go to court to make sure that we're getting first-class airfare, things of this nature. So, yeah, I think you're on the right path there. Canada soccer is Canada soccer's, the spotlight's really on them right now. I think maybe even more so than the other, than the team itself.
Spotlight was on Alfonso Davies yesterday for two reasons. Big deal or no deal at all that he declined to speak to the international media after the game?
I'm going to be really impolite here. I don't care.
All right.
I have never gotten upset. And I mean this truly. I don't get upset when players don't talk to the media. First of all, it's quite often a better story that they don't talk to the media. I mean, to be honest, it is. It's a better story that they don't talk to the media. You know, he did his responsibilities with the rights holders, et cetera, et cetera. I don't buy the argument that the media is there to represent the fans. I mean, I think that that's something that we run out there. And well, if you speak, you know, you have to speak to us to speak to the fans. No, you don't. You can go on TikTok and speak to the fans if you're Alfonso Davies. You can use social media. And I imagine Alfonso Davies would probably end up using social media at some point today or tomorrow and sending something out. So I hate it when people in the media whine about players not talking to them. Write your frickin' story without it. You know, you've seen it.
Yep.
You saw what happened. Write your story without it. And especially, sometimes I think we lose sight of the fact that these dudes are human beings and that these women are human beings. And sometimes we lose sight of the fact that, you know what, they just not want to talk to you. And that's okay. That doesn't mean they're bad people. Go about doing your job. You know, your job is to, you know, if you can't write, look at how the Brits write soccer. You have no access. You have no access to Premier League players for the most part. You've got a little mixed zone access. You never get into the locker room. You don't have access to those guys. Can you imagine what it's like to write a 25-inch game story and the score is 0-0 and you don't have any quotes? Well, that's because you know what you're writing about. And that's one of the problems I have, and I'm going to get in a soapbox here, one of the problems I have with North American media in particular is we're slaves to quotes. Most of the quotes you get are crap. They're garbage. You should know enough about the sport you're covering that you should be able to break it down without having to rely on some guy saying, boy, it would be great if I'd made that shot. So anyhow, I got off a little off track.
No.
But the Davies thing, maybe Alfonso Davies didn't feel like talking to the media. I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. But I am going to say this. As someone who has covered the women's program an awful lot internationally, and covering them in Olympics in particular, I was thinking about this morning. I've been in mixed zones with the Canadian women's soccer team when they come out. I can't remember a player not going out of their, going, not just not stopping to talk when asked to stop, but going out of their way to make sure that, hey, do you need me? You know, walking by on the way to the bus, anybody need me? You know, I'm here. And it's one of the things I've always remembered about that program and about Christine Sinclair in particular. Christine Sinclair, she's had some awful moments internationally, just some gut-wrenching moments in terms of team results. Always, always, always available. Not always eminently quotable, but always available. And I'll tell you a very funny story about where I realized that player interviews didn't matter. It was in China at the Olympics. I was there doing a story on Jonathan de Guzman, Julian de Guzman's brother, who played for Netherlands. Speaking of, you know, dual nationals, he had a choice between Canada and the Netherlands, decided to play for the Netherlands. So I wanted to do an article on him. And I had a bit of a relationship with the family. So I'm waiting in the mix zone. They're playing Argentina. I'm waiting in the mix zone, and I'm not there to talk to anybody. I'm there to talk to Jonathan de Guzman. So I'll never forget this. The Argentine team comes out of their locker room, and Lionel Messi, who was playing in the Olympics because he was, it's now a 23 or 21 and under tournament, and you're allowed to grandfather in veteran players who haven't played there before. But Lionel Messi's on the Argentine team. And Lionel Messi comes out, and he's got, I think they're chupa chups. He's got a lollipop in his mouth. Mm-hmm. He's got a lollipop in his mouth. And he's walking by the media, and, you know, Lionel, all these writers are there, and all these, you know, these guys with microphones. And there was a guy who had his notepad, right, hanging over the rail. And Messi stops, looks at the notepad, takes the guy's pen, autographs the page, puts the sucker back in his mouth, and walks on. I thought that there's no better story you're going to get out of that match. There's no better story. Nothing tells you more about the guy, the mat, whatever. Mm-hmm. Nothing tells you more about it than that. And from that moment on, I kind of thought, you know what? Everybody has bad days. Everybody has days where they don't feel like talking. And you know what? You make note of it. And you move on. And that's kind of where I am with Alfonso Davies. But I think it was hugely important for Alfonso Davies that he scored that goal, mm-hmm, after missing the first goal, or after missing that penalty kick. I think it's hugely important that Alfonso Davies came away from this tournament with this moment. But yeah, beyond that, I'm willing to bet Alfonso Davies will be at the podium the next time he's asked to go to the podium. We have to allow these guys a little bit of space.
Check out his TikTok later today for the breaking comments, but you're right. I love to hear the Canada women's soccer team is the best, because women are the best. So thanks for validating that take, Jeff.
Well, I watch and I hear everything that's being said about, you know, the Canadian men's team, and oh my God, Canada finally has its soccer moment. Mm-hmm. At some point, we've got to stop apologizing for those mistakes and just call them for what they are. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're mistakes. They are. If you're in our industry, you have to be aware of what the Canadian women's soccer team did.
That's right.
I'll tell you this: they are a powerful brand. In addition to being a great team, and all that, Canadian women's soccer is a powerful brand, and I I just think we need to remember that a little bit. It's great. Hey, the World Cup's a big deal. I get that. It's great. It's wonderful. Let's hope that when the Canadian women, when the Women's World Cup rolls around, you know, let's hope that we have the same fervor that we're showing for the men's team. Because quite frankly, the Canadian women have a better chance of winning the World Cup than the Canadian men do.
And they'll keep making Canadian heritage moments, I believe, down the road. Jeff, appreciate you joining us. Great to hear you back again on our network, and enjoy some time.
Thanks, we'll folks. Take care. Yep.
Jeff Blaricos of Kicking the Grass on Sportsnet Radio Network, and our insider brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com.
We got to go to break, but I will say, you know, he stopped me and said, you know, they're in next year. And yeah, I guess I misspoke a little bit. Understanding that, I kind of wish they had to earn their way, because I worry about the complacency. And if you had to get back in, if you had to be better than you were in qualification this time around, if you didn't just get the door open for you, maybe you'd be in a better position. Because I think they should qualify, but I'd love to see them just qualify.
But they had to earn their way in this
without
time.
Being,
and exactly, this is what happened.
Exactly. But there should be, like always pressure, always have to be better, always have to get better, always have to pour more money in it. I don't worry about the players as much as I do. I worry about the
you're
the Federation.
You're a big Federation guy this morning.
Well, it's clear that they screwed up on the way here. Winning because of the players, not anything they did. It's important to remember that, because we can just assume that they're going to be there, and they are. We can't assume it, but only because they're hosting. Money talks.
Speaking of money, we got the Wake and Rake up next, and my Ghana up 2-0 right now.
My Ghana.
Against South Korea. We got Brazil, Switzerland, Portugal, and Uruguay all to come today. Plus Leafs at Red Wings, Cavs at Raptors, and Steelers and Colts Monday Night Football. Send in your anchor submissions. You got 5 minutes. Let's take a break, and we'll be back for the Wake and Rake on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake up!
Now it's time for Wake and Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of accuracy.
Show me the money!
With Ailish and Justin.
All right, time to make some money on your Monday. Right now, Ghana up 2-0 over South Korea. Do you have any bets on this one?
I may have had a little South Korea money line. Just a,
how's that going for you, buddy?
Half unit or something. Something down the drain.
Yikes.
Within 45 minutes. It's actually, I rebounded over the weekend with the World Cup betting.
Well.
And I'm going back to the well today, so just be prepared.
Let me just tell you that, humble brag, last week I went 5 for 5 on my Wake and Rake picks, looking to keep the hot streak alive.
And you know what that means?
What?
Like, the anchor is up to the audience and the listeners, obviously. But we kind of we choose between the 5 to 10 selections that we put in the doc here. So because you went 5 for 5, you've earned the opportunity to make the final decision on the anchor all week. How about that?
All week?
All week.
I don't like that, Justin.
All week.
Okay. Let's go through our... You want to go through our anchors first, or do you want to have specific... Do you have any specific bets for Brazil, Switzerland, or Portugal, or Uruguay?
My Wake and Rake will be from Uruguay and Portugal.
I love that.
I kind of like the over on Brazil,
Switzerland. Because you've been really good at betting soccer on the show.
I just said it was a bounce back weekend.
Well, bring it into the Wake and Rake. Let's go.
I hate the fact that I have to, I put myself out there for blowing up the parlay before
anyone
gets home from work. Like, I do hate that aspect of it. But I'm most interested in this right now. I will be honest.
That's good for you.
This is top of mind for me. So I'm going to continue to try and keep the good vibes rolling through the weekend into Monday morning here.
So you'll be
aside
picking,
from the South Korea result.
What's your Wake and Rake?
Okay, so it's Uruguay plus a half goal.
Okay.
I think it's like minus 110.
I don't understand. It's because it's like...
They do decimal odds for it. It's 1.9. So that's minus 110. Whatever. It's close to even money. It's on the up and up. It's not like I'm cherry picking anything here.
You do whatever you want.
It is a play against Portugal. Portugal is going to give up goals. I think the over is maybe the better bet here. Is the over 2.5? Maybe I'll make a switch.
No, go with your gut.
Anyway, I think Portugal is going to give up. They might get one as well. But I feel like Uruguay needs a result. Whether it's a draw or a win, either way, you're going to win the bet because Portugal has to win for this bet to lose. I just think it's a good spot for Uruguay to get a point, at least.
Okay, so I'm going to lock that in. And anything else for Brazil, Switzerland, none of that?
I kind of like the over, but it burned us last time, so I didn't want to go to it.
The only bet in about World Cup from the text line is Juliana, who is going completely off the board tonight since her Warriors are not playing, and taking Ronaldo to score an anytime goal today at plus 170.
That definitely goes against the Uruguay pick. We probably can't parlay that, so no, but we'll just have to take that as, hey, if you want a little hedge against my bet, go with Juliana. That's probably not a bad look.
Okay, so here is two selections from tonight's Monday Night Football game, which is Steelers and Colts, Jeff Saturday's Colts, and the way that this is shaking up is it's a 2.5-point favorite, the Colts. Our Wake and Rake listeners, Big Mac, says Steelers money line. Steelers have a 7-game win streak going back 14 years. Sometimes it can be Saturday on Sunday, but never on Monday.
Mm-hmm. A little Jeff Saturday shade.
I like that.
I guess that 7-game winning streak over the Colts dating back 7 years. I guess that could be a Monday Night Football thing. Anyway, either way, I like the Steelers. The 2.5 is... never betting the Steelers spread because you're likely to not gain anything with those 2 points. So I think the Steelers money line around plus 120, 30 is a pretty good pick tonight. I'm going to be playing that myself. Maybe a little aggressive for the parlay. Probably a safer option on the board.
I also liked Steelers money line tonight because Steelers basically...
Hey, if you want to do it,
they got TJ Watt back and their defense is...
You want to do it?
Pretty good. Well, just a second.
Oh, it's your choice. I'm not even going to suggest
what I like. I like that or the under. Okay, so last one here from Monday Night Football. Corey from Port Hope. Good morning. I like Pittman Jr. over 66.5 receiving yards. Steelers have one of the worst passing defenses in the league. I like the Colts to move the ball through the air tonight and Pittman to have a big night.
I think Pittman had a decent game last time out. He's had a disappointing season, 100%, but there's been no... you know, nothing out of the backfield or in the pocket for the Colts has been reliable this year, whether it's Ellinger or Matt Ryan coming in. Now the change at coach puts Matt Ryan back in the spotlight. I just feel like it's sort of a fickle market a little bit. Like you can't really get a read on what exactly they're trying to do through the passing game. And you can't rely on Matt Ryan with that pressure from the Steelers that they could bring. Like, that's why I like the Steelers money line, is because they can get pressure and make life difficult on Matt Ryan. And for that reason, I don't, you know, I'm not gravitating towards picking the over on a receiver for Indianapolis.
Okay, so two from the Toronto Maple Leafs game tonight. Ron and Markham says, good morning. Today, let's keep it rolling with the Maple Leafs. They've won 3 games in a row, all on the road, seem to be clicking. Just take the Leafs to win, minus 155. That's Ron and Markham, which I really like as well. They're putting in the Detroit Red Wings.
Yeah, it's a big game. We've been talking all year about how Tampa's probably the team that they're going to play in the first round, and that probably makes a lot of sense. But right now, if the playoffs started today, it would be the Detroit Red Wings, who've been playing very, very well. You know, when you look at that back end, you're like, am I really going to get behind the Leafs right now? But they've been playing so good lately. It just seems like, yeah, if it's minus 155, it is playable.
Okay, so I think I've decided where we're going with this.
Okay.
My Wake and Rake
pick. It's been too much of my opinion, by the way. This is fine. On you right now.
My Wake and Rake pick is going to be joint with Jag and Scarborough because I've consistently hit this, and let's keep it rolling. It's going to be Tavares over 2.5 shots. It's like our OG steals and blocks right now. It's been a lock. I don't want to put that pressure on us, but I believe in it as well. It was one of the first ones I circled.
Dirty word.
So we're doing it. Tavares over 2.5 shots. We're putting that in the parlay.
I mean, as long as there's overlap with Mitch Marner, who's on another level right now in
He'll
terms of hunting down
net,
pucks
yes.
and getting the puck to John Tavares, it seems like a lot of the power play looks go through John Tavares. I love Tavares over 2.5 as long as it's there and as long as it's not juiced to the minus 200 range.
It isn't. It's minus 160, but still.
No, that's not. It's
pretty good.
That's like OG. Blocks and steals, Tavares shots, it makes all the sense in the world.
So Mitch Marner's on a 16-game point streak.
Yep.
Tonight, to continue that, you got to bet the over 1.5, but it's plus money. So, I mean, if you can find a way to bet a Marner point or 2 points, I think that's worth throwing in because he is absolutely red hot. So let's put a plus money Steelers money line in our anchor submission.
Done.
Big Mac texting that in. We both like it. It's kind of like a team play right now. It's plus money as well. So let's run down our Wake and Rake. We got Uruguay plus 0.5.
Plus a half.
Pittsburgh Steelers on the money line. And John Tavares over 2.5 shots. Altogether, that's plus 579.
That's a good parlay.
It's a pretty great
and
parlay.
And it's a nice little, if I survive the World Cup game, if I survive.
Then we can all watch the other games.
In Portugal, then you can look at potentially a live bet if things aren't going particularly well. But you got some options if we get to the Steelers in a money line scenario as
Be fun.
The last leg of our parlay.
We've got Raptors and Cavs. Raptors are 135 favorites on the money line at 2.5 point. On the spread.
Siakam questionable. That's like, it carries everything,
yes,
right?
If he's
playing, if he plays, I like it. If he doesn't, then you got to be thinking about Cleveland, I think.
And the Maple Leafs minus 160 on the money line. You could parlay those together if you want to do a little homer's parlay, but not a lot of juice on it, but just believe in your guys. And it's my plus 182 for the homer's parlay.
That's probably worth a go as well.
All right. That was it for the Fan Morning Show this morning. Thanks for texting in your thoughts and feelings on Canada in the World Cup. We'll be back tomorrow to kick it off for a day without any Toronto sports on a Tuesday. Looking forward still to Thursday's matchup, Canada and Morocco. Thanks for listening and have a wonderful day.